would get him out.
Well, Clive Stafford-Smith, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Human rights lawyer, director of Reprieve, which represents 8 Guantanamo prisoners. That does it for our show. Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at Princeton today at noon. I'll be speaking on Saturday in California. We'll be broadcasting from Marin on Friday. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Special thanks to Renee Feldstein, Guzder, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Voices from the Edge with Lisa Lovering.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop, Saturday, October 28th at the Native American Youth and Family Center in Portland. The Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop welcomes all to attend this free, life-changing training, which incorporates traditional Native American teachings through stories, exercises, and discussions that are even more relevant and needed today. These workshops are conducted in a respectful way that is both healing and empowering. Again, that is Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop on Saturday, October 28th, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The last 6 weeks have seen an unprecedented number of climate change-related disasters, from multiple hurricanes slamming the Caribbean and the U.S. South to earthquakes in Mexico. Anarchists, anti-fascists, and anti-capitalists have been at the forefront of the disaster relief efforts. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, a special program focusing on Houston, Mexico, and Puerto Rico. I'll speak with Nisi X of the Black Women's Defense League in Texas, as well as anarchist organizer Scott Crow and activists organizing to send aid to Puerto Rico and Mexico.
People put aside their politics. They put aside what they think it should be, because when a disaster opens up us, our hearts, our emergency hearts to humanity, it actually shows who we really are.
That's this Friday from 11 a.m. to noon on KBOO.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving, and today, Dua Bashwa is a poet from two cultures, and her new book, Finding Home, is about her efforts to remain connected to both Oregon and Pakistan, where her family roots are planted. Dua, thank you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
I want to ask you, can you pronounce your name for us so that I can get it right?
Yeah, Dua Bajwa.
Yay! Okay. Dua, the news this week is about the president's Muslim travel bans, court judgment smacking down the third iteration of these bans. There's a lot of political discussion on immigrant and refugee communities, but I want to shift the frame a little bit and ask, like, want to look at real people living real lives outside of newspaper headlines. And I'm so glad that you're here. I wanted to ask, what made you write this book? What brought you to this issue in the first place?
I think I was 15 or 16 when I started paying attention to what was happening in the news. And I used to love going to protests. But there were like points where my parents said, no, it isn't safe anymore to go out. So I was frustrated. I didn't want to just sit at home and do nothing. So I went to writing. And then when I saw the elections come up, that's when I like really started writing poetry.
Dua, why poetry? What does poetry bring that other arts do not?
It's so free. There's no limit. It's just me and the pen, and I can just unwind everything I'm feeling.
Now I want to ask a serious question, and then I want to have you read a poem. What have you been coping with, and how do you cope with it? Are issues or things hitting you as you walk down the street? What are you living with right now?
Yes. I've been traveling a lot this summer, and even through my daily basis, like when I'm going to college, I do experience racism. I do experience like different, the way that people look at me now is way different than I feel like they did a year ago. Just because of President Trump, he's made others feel that it's okay to promote racism or just be very vocal about their opinions.
Yeah. Listeners, this is the question, these are the questions we're asking this morning. Are you from two cultures? How do you navigate that in this, what feels like a very hostile political and social climate in the United States right now? And the number to call to share your story, it's 503-231-8187. Are you from two cultures, and how do you navigate that? Dua, can you read us a poem?
Yes.
I'm excited about this. Thank you.
Okay. I wish I could have lived in America pre-9/11. No matter how desperately we try to prove that we're good, the acts of a few created a label for my people that we haven't been able to erase. I just don't want my little brother and baby cousins to be scared, because I know one day on the playground, they will be called that dreaded T-word, just like how I was. How do you stop the past from repeating itself?
Wow. Okay. Listeners, are you from two cultures? How do you navigate that in what feels like a hostile social and political climate? The number to call and the phone lines are open is 503-231-8187. We're on the line with Dua Bajwa. She is an Oregonian, a poet. Dua, I'm saying that you're an Oregonian because I think that you live here. Are you an Oregonian? How do you think of yourself? And where do people like me get off just claiming you as an Oregonian? That's my other question, but you don't have to answer that. How do you define yourself? Tell us more about you.
I think I'm just a college freshman just trying to help people. I understand like we're in a time period where a lot of people are afraid. A lot of people think, you know, it's like, we're just going to sit at home and be scared. But we have to like remember that this country is great because we make it great. So we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your family and your connection to Pakistan? Who lives there?
Yeah.
Tell us more about your family.
Can I start by reading a poem about my father?
Oh, well, I think that I would love it if you did. Thank you.
Okay, one second. Okay. I'd like to have met my father before the world tried to break him. Could I have a time machine, just for a few moments, to go to a time when he was young and free, before his attention became driven on protecting his family, when there was more to life than just paying the bills and putting food on the table? Could I have that time machine, please? Just a few seconds, so I could ask what were his dreams. Did he throw away his own for me? The immigrant's daughter would hand over the universe to him. If she could.
Wow. Dua Bajwa from her new book of poetry, Finding Home. Tell us about your dad. Where is he at? Who is he? What did he do? Tell us about him.
He's a business accountant. I do live with my parents. We came here when I was 3 years old. They left Pakistan just like on the hope, you know, to giving their kids a better future. And ever since we got here, you know, I've seen them give up everything. They didn't, like, my mom went back to Pakistan after 14 years, and I saw tears in her eyes. And I was just like, when you see that, you see how much your parents give up for you, and you think, what can you do back for them?
Wow. You don't have another poem, do you?
I have one about my mother.
Oh, I would love to hear it.
Okay, 1 second. Just 1 second.
We are speaking with Dua Bajwa about having two cultural identities, her incredible new book, Finding a Home. And listen, callers, we have the phone lines open. Are you from two cultures, and how do you navigate that? The number is 503-231-8187. Now, don't wait till the end of the hour to start calling, because you know how that is. Start calling now. And what do you think, Dua? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Thank you.
We are so different, nothing alike but our nose. I remember screaming for so long that I wanted you to change. These old traditions and mindsets don't belong in this country. Bury them deep within the suitcases you brought and stow them away. It took me 18 years to understand. Your under-eye circles came from losing sleep over the possibilities of what people would say about me. You built a home from a few laughs and a few cushions. But maybe that curfew you made that I resented all those nights ended up saving me the most, because you knew more than I ever could. My mother was the first home I ever had.
Well, Dua Bashwa from Finding Home. Dua, so your freshman, you started college. Where did you grow up here?
I grew up in Northern Virginia.
Right on. What town?
Chantilly.
I know a bunch of people from Virginia over here. What are some of the biggest myths about immigrant families, immigrant communities, immigrant individuals that you've experienced in living here? I don't even know if I feel comfortable using that label immigrant, but I mean people who have come to the United States from a different country. What do you think is the biggest myth that that we have?
That all immigrant children, brown children, grow up to be doctors.
Tell us more about that.
It's not really a myth too. A lot, it's expected out of a lot of children. Like, my mom had that dream about me too. When I told her I wanted to start writing, she was like, oh, okay. But it's just like, we don't really look at other fine arts first. I think we look at doctors, we look at lawyers, and we think, okay, this is what it means to be successful. But then we don't really look at fine arts. So when I reached out toward it, my family was always very supportive, but they were like, okay, she had a different dream.
Yeah. I have been working with multicultural communities this calendar year in a deeper way than I have in the past, and mm-hmm. working with young people who are part of the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that the Trump administration is just playing that like a Wurlitzer to divide people is what it looks like in a lot of ways. But only certain people could qualify for DACA. And watching the really bitter federal debate about it, I'm seeing people now, young people who are part of the DACA program, who are standing up and saying, I only represent part of the youth of my community. Most people couldn't even qualify for this because they're not perfect enough. And I want to speak up on behalf of people who are not perfect, who are, you know, that other myth that immigrants are stronger than white people, and that immigrants, there's almost like a what's the word I'm looking for? Idealization of immigration in the United States that comes from so many different places, because over these generations, when we had the Irish immigrants come, you know, different waves of immigrants, it's interesting how, even though I spend a lot of time trying to crack through my bigotry and my stereotypes, mm-hmm. It's like a nesting doll. There's always another level. Dua, I wanted to ask you, do you have ideas about how everyday people should be working, should have a different frame for all the people that have come to the United States in more recently? I mean, do you have advice for our country about how we could deal with these issues better and help really maximize our strength as a woven community across the United States? That's a big rambling question, but I have a feeling you have ideas about how to make these things better.
I think, first of all, we just have to learn to accept differences. Differences were not made to separate us. It's like human nature to always want to be better than one another, and we've gotten to the point where we try to use like a skin color or a different faith to justify us being better than one another. And I feel like that's the first thing we have to get rid of. If we want a when I wrote my book, I want other children to have a better future. I want immigrant children to not fear, like, being an immigrant child, you know? So I feel like as the teenagers now, the young people now, we just have to, like, go out in the world and promote peace. All the bad ideas that people have, all the bad images, we just have to try to get rid of them. And I know that's not, like, the best advice, but it starts small, and hopefully if it reaches some corners of the country, it will reach all corners of the country.
What I hear you saying is, open up your heckin' minds. Open up your minds.
Yes. Yeah.
If you just tuned in, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving. We're speaking with poet Dua Bashwa. Her new book is about trying to preserve her roots, remain connected to both United States culture and the culture of Pakistan, where her family roots are planted, where her family came from. And really, listeners, we're kind of trying to spur a conversation about cultural differences, people who live in two cultures and trying to make it right. And it's actually a really dangerous thing to do in the United States, and has been, maybe always has been. I feel like this issue of multiculturalism in America, it's one of the biggest broken pieces in our minds that we carry around. We have a creation myth in the United States of who we are, but then we can't even extend it to people who are newcomers, right, coming. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. People, don't wait till the end of this hour to weigh in on this conversation. I am consistently surprised at the multicultural families that I meet here who, like Dua said, are kind of afraid to speak out. They're afraid to step out. People who literally stay in their homes because it is so dangerous. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. Are you from two cultures, and how are you navigating that in this climate? So Dua, I want to go back to you. As you have, tell us about the journey of writing this book. So you were a young teenager. Were you in your room and with a pencil and pen? Or most 15-year-olds don't write a whole body of poetry that can be published in a book. So what was your motivation, and what were you thinking about? You talked about it a little bit, but can you go a little deeper? I mean, you must have spent a lot of time on this.
Yeah, so I started my senior year, but even before starting college, I used to turn to my friends and say, you know, I want to publish a book by the time we graduate. And, you know, they'd laugh, but they'd be like, okay, you know, that's fine. And then my senior year started, and I was very close to my principal, and he would see me frustrated all the time about the news. And I would show him some of my writing, and then he would be like, you know, this is actually really good. Why don't you try to get yourself self-published? And I was like, no, there's no way. And then I actually sat down, and I was like, okay, it's September right now. Maybe if I just work and work and work, maybe by June I'll get to a point. And then it helped a lot, like, that I went to Pakistan in March for a cousin's wedding, and I wrote a lot more there too. But then June came, and I had to send in a final editing, and I had written all this stuff in the past year. But I was just like, I was just sitting in my room one night, and I was just so tired. And I was like, no, I didn't do the topics justice. So basically, in like 2 weeks, I rewrote the whole thing, like, in my room. I was a hermit. Like, I did not get out. All I did was write, but I got it done.
Strangely, I can relate to that. I'm kind of in a similar situation right now with a project. And as you say that, and I think about my own experience, it's remarkable that in this modern day, in this year 2017, every day I wake up and I look at a media outlet and something genuinely unacceptable or shocking is happening in Washington, D.C. Yeah. It's literally a distraction, and it's paralyzing. And so I honor you for your ability to dig deep and focus and finish a coherent message to the world. You had mentioned how you want children to have a different experience. You sort of wrote this for children. Am I understanding that? Who do you want to be reading this book?
I want young middle schoolers, high schoolers, young adults to be reading this, especially like if they're children of immigrants, because growing up, I felt like I really wanted to fit into American culture, but I was coming from a very cultural background with my parents still very prominent in preserving the culture. So I had nobody to tell me that it's okay to how to balance both. I felt pressured by both societies, and at times it became very suffocating. I couldn't do anything about it. So I hope that if another girl, if another boy feels like this, he can see, you know, this is the perspective of someone who's been there, and they're not alone.
We are live on the phone with Dua Bashwa, her book of poetry, Finding Home. Dua, as you have moved through life, do you, in your circle of friends, do you have other friends with a similar experience going through the same thing or not?
Yes. I have I have a very diverse friend group, but my friends that are Afghan or Pakistani, they do experience a lot of the same things I do. Like, I was in Miami this summer with a group of my girlfriends after graduation, and we went to a part of Miami where we were the only, brown people, and there were some people that were just, turning around to look at us, and we went into a pizza shop, and this lady actually refused to serve us, and I was just so blown away by the fact. It just felt so surreal.
Why do you think she... Well, so that's a violation of federal law. That was strictly against the law, what happened there. What is it that... Can we dig into that situation a little bit? About being refused? I'm bringing this up because as we're talking about who we are in the United States of America, I've got very conservative relatives. I've got very, I'm going to say, left-wing friends and colleagues. I'm not sure what the word liberal means anymore. But I don't really think that all the white people I know really understand what other people are going through. And we watch TV, we watch Law and Order, we watch The Daily Show, we think we have black friends because we watch Trevor Noah. It's really confusing. So I just want to dig into this a second, because this is the kind of thing that people don't even really want to believe has happened in the United States. Are you there?
Yeah.
Yay, cool. So what can we dig into that minute when this person refused service to you? Actually, I've known a few people that have been refused service at cafes and restaurants in Portland. What do you think was it that made that person refuse service?
I think it was just our skin color. Like, she was looking at her other coworkers. I literally saw her give plates to somebody else, and she was telling us, no, like, our pizza, like, we don't serve food today, like, our pizza's out. And, like, you know, you see this on Twitter, you see this on YouTube, and in that, you know, when you see it online, you're like, if this was me, I would stand up for myself. I would get so angry. But in that moment, you're just so hurt. You're thinking, we all bleed the same. We're all the same people. We all belong in this country, but you're literally treating me as if I'm dirt.
It's humiliating.
No, it really was, especially with all her co-workers were laughing, and I wanted to leave right away.
What did you do?
My best friend talked to her, and we all were saying, this is completely wrong, and we did leave the pizza place, within 5 minutes. But my best friend made sure to give her a point, saying, you know, you're not doing your job. We're gonna call management. We're gonna complain, which we did. But she just started laughing. Like, she found so much humor in the situation. She was like, yeah, go ahead and call. I don't care. It's not like anything I did was wrong.
It's against federal law to do
that. I was like, okay.
So I want to say, 2 weeks ago, a beloved coworker of mine whose family is from El Salvador went to the coffee shop by the corner of at our office where everybody goes all the time. And there was an employee there who is, she's an Alterna woman. She's got a pierced nose and blue hair. And this woman, my coworker, who is one of the nicest people ever, quiet, focused, polite, very polite. She said this one blue-haired coworker looks at her and doesn't say anything, but it's the look on her face without words. And that consistently when she goes in to order, I think it's a bagel with peanut butter or something like that, this worker will say that there aren't any, even if my coworker can see them in the cabinet. And the other workers aren't like that. But this one person who, again, she looks like, I don't even know what it means anymore when you see someone who has blue hair or a pierced nose or lots of tattoos. We used to assume that people like that were more open-minded and maybe more artistic. Yes. And I don't know what it means anymore. So I just had to share that story. It happens all the time. And listeners, the phone lines are open. Okay, no one's calling. And I know that at 7 minutes before nine, there's going to be 100 people piling on the phone line. So don't be that person. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Seriously, listener, look, listeners, have you ever been refused service at a cafe or restaurant in your town because of what you look like? I'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. Are you from two cultures? How do you navigate that? Give us your call. This is story time. We want to hear about this. Dua, what I love about your work and what I love about your approach is that, and I mean, I've said this a lot recently, I read more newspapers than I ever have, but I feel less informed about what's really going on around me than I ever have.
Yeah.
And it's in part, it's because I've always been a newspaper-based life form. And I'm like, well, if it's not in the paper, is it a thing? And lately, as we've seen this unbelievable downsizing of journalism all over the country, like roughly one third fewer journalists on the ground than compared to 15 years ago, I feel as if there's stories that maybe even would have been covered 10 years ago, but aren't now, right? Our daily newspaper in Oregon isn't even a daily anymore. So I wanted to ask you, Dua, do you, you know, talking about this issue, finding home, and navigating cultures and not, and suddenly not feeling safe walking down the street, do you feel, what stories do you, or issues do you see around you that you're not seeing reflected in the media that you think people should be aware of? These are big, heavy questions I'm lobbing at you.
I think we are just so, like, revolved around President Trump, like, and as we should keep an eye on him. But the small issues that are happening, like in high schools or in colleges, how like a girl within a hijab is being so bullied, the fact that she's getting her headscarf like ripped off by classmates, and like that should be an issue. That should be on the news. People should be seeing that, you know, this racism, this hatred has given people so much courage that they think that they can do whatever they want. And it's like no one wants to cover the story of, hey, this man going on an airplane got kicked off the airplane because he was wearing a beard. But it does happen. I've seen it all over Twitter. But then I turn on like the news and I go to every news channel, and that's not an issue. But that's a violation of like a basic like right. So I feel like we're just forgetting to talk about like what's happening in daily people's lives.
There's something about if it's not on Facebook, it's not real. And that's and then, but then there's this other issue of who is manipulating the news media so that there really is fake news out there. Anyway, we do have a couple callers. We have Chris on the phone. Chris, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just love to hear your voice, Lisa. Love to hear you back on the radio. It's amazing. And the guest that you have, Dua, I just want to thank you for putting your words out into the universe for the rest of us to capture and hold on to and listen to and resonate with. I'm an educator, and we do a slam poetry thing every year called Slam Boo. And I was wondering, are you in the Portland area?
No, but thank you so much for your nice words. I actually live in Washington, D.C.
Okay, great. Well, if you're ever in the Northwest during the school year, we would love to snatch you up and have you come work with the middle school kids on poetry writing and what your sources of inspiration or motivation to put words on page are. But I just want to thank you for doing what you do, and I hope that you continue to write poetry. And if you would, I'll take my answer off the air, but if you would just talk a little bit about what your plans for the future are, if you want to, if you feel like this is where you want to go, or, you know, what is your life's work? What do you feel like you're doing right now?
Wait, Chris,
and
Chris,
where
don't,
are you headed?
Chris, don't jump off the air. We'll hear okay. what Dua has to say, but I have some questions for you too. And it's a great okay. question, Dua. So Chris, hold on. And Dua, okay. yeah, what is your vision for what you're doing now and what are you going to do in the future?
I think I'm going to continue what I'm doing. I don't know if activist is the right term, but I do want to continue doing this for the rest of my life. I want to continue writing, if not poetry, but even publishing more. I want to reach out to middle schools and high schools, like hands-on with the kids, and just be, I just want to, even if it's a little difference, I just want to make a difference for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Word. I'm trying to go toward a business major, but I think I might do like a writing major, like alongside of it, but we'll see.
You should do it.
And because this is interesting, and Chris, don't go anywhere, but I have to say, you know, in this, I used to tell people I'm really old, but the fact is I'm super duper middle-aged, like hyper middle-aged. And we don't even know 10 years from now, we don't even know how we're going to be taking in news. Is it going to be audio, visual, digital suppositories? We don't even know. And I watched the new Blade Runner movie, and what freaked me out about it was that the dates on that movie are basically now. Okay, so if you watch that movie, I'm not promoting any movie, but when I'm watching this ruined landscape where trees don't exist anymore and the date on that is 20 years from now, I horribly believe it. I horribly believe it. So I love that, Dua, that you're interested in writing, because I think that writing is the kernel of whatever's going to happen in the future. But Chris, I wanted to ask you, in your work as an educator, what do you see happening in the classrooms, in the schoolyard, around people coming from two cultures? Because in our state of Oregon, there's more and more kids who are multicultural, and it's sort of something that we don't process that very well. So what do you see, Chris, happening between the kids?
Well, you know, I think as everywhere right now, there's a lot of fear. And with kids that are navigating two cultures, there's some measure of shame and kind of wanting to hide that other part of themselves. And, you know, like you were saying, it's a really dangerous thing in this country, because we have such strong assimilationist forces that want to incorporate everyone into this idea of whiteness. And so the pressure is really strong, and you can really see that in the students when they arrive to the school as new students. You can really see that fear and anxiety around how they're going to be accepted. And so I know that in my classroom, I work extra hard to make sure that those folks feel safe and wanted and welcome and worthy. And, you know, we do that in several different ways. One of the things that has been an incredible core of my classroom is this Maya principle called En La Quech, which is a poem based on the principle by Luis Valdez, who was a farm worker and organizer with Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and Larry Itliong, who was a Filipino organizer and worker. And we use that poem to just remind ourselves that the first line is, "You are my other me. If I do harm to you, I do harm to myself. If I love and respect you, I love and respect myself." And so that's how we start our day every single day. And I use that to build in what we call classroom management. So when students are mistreating each other, we go back to En La Quech, and we talk about how that mistreatment actually has an effect on our own selves and can actually damage our own selves. And so I use that as a community building tool, right, to remind folks that we're all really the same, and that our differences, as Dua was saying earlier in the broadcast, that they're just differences, and that they should be celebrated and embraced. And we need to learn how to be flexible with those and appreciate those and not use them as tools to put other people down. And so that, and then I have kids count in. So before we say this poem, we say it all together. And I try to get kids to count in different languages. So every day I ask, does anybody have a new language? And so I'm trying to emphasize that these differences are what make us richer and what make us stronger. And I think there's a lot of educators that are out there doing similar things. So there's a ton of fear, but there's also, a small contingent of us who are really working hard to break down those barriers and those fears so that we can get together, because we need each other, right?
Chris,
so.
One more question, and we talked with Dua about Dua. Chris is this awesome guy. He's a wonderful person. He's a regular, just in case you wondered. Chris, I'd ask Dua this. Why poetry? I know you're an artist. Why poetry? Why does poetry matter differently than other arts? And I feel like rap is a form of poetry. Why poetry?
Yeah. Poetry is this powerful vehicle where, I mean, every word matters. And every word always matters. But we know that when it comes to poetry, even if we don't have the language to say it. And so there's something that is essential in poetry that, you know, every word is loaded down with so much import and so much meaning and so many possible meanings. And so we enter into it as a form of reading, writing, listening, or speaking with, I think, a different mindset than we approach a news article or a textbook. And so it has these different demands on how we listen and from what parts of ourselves we listen. And so I think there's something there. And in Slam Boo, I can't tell you why or how, but Slam Boo, the whole principle is getting people together across cultures. And it started out with a middle school in St. Helens, Oregon, which is a rural area, and Lane Middle School in Southeast Portland. And the whole idea was, let's throw these kids together and tell them they have to write a poem before they even have time to figure out that it's awkward. And through that became the vehicle for breaking down those walls and those differences and for building empathy for the other. And I don't know why, but it just has this quality to it that draws in those kids that feel marginalized and that brings people together in a way that I just don't see an essay writing workshop doing. It's just amazing.
All right. So. Chris, it's always a joy to hear from you. Thanks again for calling.
Yes.
You're listening
Keep writing.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. Today, we're speaking with Dua Bashwa, a poet from two cultures. Her new book is Finding Home, and we have another caller. Terry, what's going on?
Hey, I just wanted to take a minute and just say that in order to patch this divide that we have within our society, we have to have many different individuals that are willing to stand up for what they are experts in, to be able to represent the differences, to be able to pull those things together. And the fact is, as I see it, that poetry, as well as many other academic and other pursuits, are what's going to be necessary for us to pull together. We don't have one solution, and to continue to harbor the idea that one solution will fix our ills, I think, marginalizes and doesn't really respect the idea of the differences of the cultures that can bring so much of us together.
Thanks, Terry. That's a great point.
Thank you.
I love that we took this whole concept of poetry and dragged it into what's usually a show slot that's about politics, blah, 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 politics. Because poetry is kind of like flowers. Sometimes they're stinky flowers. Sometimes they're beautiful flowers. But I think it's true that it makes us think differently about what's going on around us. So anyway, we do have another caller.
Okay.
Jack is on the line. What's going on, Jack?
You were asking for anecdotes about being refused service.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And I'm actually, like, even beyond hyper middle age.
Okay.
so the anecdotes are kind of old. And I can't remember everything in detail, but, it happened a lot, probably most often in Japan. Happened also in Southeast Asia, in India, in the Middle East pretty often. I actually had a guy pull a knife on me in Afghanistan once. Because I guess I wasn't being the kind of customer he wanted me to be, so he pulled a knife on me and told me to get out. and in North Africa, even in Europe, it happened once or twice. I don't remember it happening here. It happened in Mexico once. I guess my point is that this kind of thing happens everywhere.
Cool, Jack. And so my point to that is also that that's actually unconstitutional in the United States. It's strictly against the law, and which is interesting to hear that perspective around like a global traveler being refused service. And we do have another caller, but I want to finish my thought about Jack. And thanks for calling, Jack, because I think this is a moment when it's really interesting and instructive to look at the way bigger picture. You know, what do these issues look like in other countries? And so in the United States, I think it's fair to say that this idea about being refused service comes from the Civil Rights Act of 1964 or 1965, in which people from certain defined groups in the United States culture, and I think there's maybe 8 or 10 groups now, it's against the law to discriminate against those particular predetermined groups, because the Supreme Court determined that those groups had been so historically discriminated against. The Supreme Court saying, this is a place where theoretically a really patriotic person could say, we're better than Japan, India, the Middle East, and Afghanistan because we don't refuse service, although we do. It is against the law. So thank you for bringing that up, Jack. That's a big wind up. And we have another caller. We have David on the phone. What's going on, David?
Oh, morning. I just wanted to ask your I know there are different styles of poetry. You know, you've got limericks and you got odes and all sorts of different things. And I'm just wondering, is there like there's an old expression? I think it's come. Jesus says you got to say a thing three times for it to really kick in. And one of your earlier callers kind of brought that up about technical people need to take a stand, and you know, so you got kind of right brain people, you know, who are very methodical and businesslike, and they're more dreamy people. And I guess there's a third group, so that if you say a thing three times, you're going to get all the groups. And I'm just wondering, is there a kind of a poetic style that deals with, you know, repeating things multiple ways?
That's so interesting you would say that, David. The rule of three, it plays out in so many parts of different kinds of art. That's a fascinating and very deep, even, you know, technical nerdly question about poetry. What is your take on that?
You're asking if there's anything in poetry that repeats?
Yeah, he's asking, is there a tradition about, he's looking at the rule of three, and how you, a lot of time, I mean, in public relations, I say this to people all the time, if you really want to get your message across, say it three times at least, three different ways. That's just interesting. So, yeah, he's asking about repetition in poetry. What I kind of also hear him asking is, do you have certain techniques in poetry that you find particularly powerful that you're employing? I hear him saying that too. It's a fascinating question.
I think that there is a way. Like in my poems, there is a lot of repetition. There is a lot of me going back to certain topics because I feel like if I say it once, okay, you know, you've read it. So I do feel that I have to keep saying it over and over. I have one poem where I'm talking about religion and culture, and in that poem, I say three times, "When are you going to get it? I've grown tired of yelling," I've grown tired of yelling three times. Because it is true, if you don't say it like more than once, people don't get it. So I do believe that's a factor in poetry.
Dua, you can't read that poem for us, can you?
Yes, I can.
So if you just tuned in, this is an unusual show. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. We are talking with Dua Bajwa, a poet. Whose newest book of poetry, Finding Home, is about her efforts to remain connected to both the United States and Pakistan, which is where her family roots come from. And this book was written when she was a teenager. And we've talked a little bit about who should be reading the book, who is it aimed at, and Dua's read a couple poems from it. I feel it's really important to understand political issues from a different window sometimes. So go ahead, Dua, if you've got it.
Yeah. Days we feel that we're better than one another, and we feel that the whole world is against us, and it feels that way, isn't it? What does it mean to be a Muslim? What does it mean to believe in Islam? But the biggest thing is to work against one another too. We always find the need to bring down another or talk about another person's sins. And I wonder, do you have a daughter? Surely you have a mother. Or maybe you are a father to a daughter. So why are you so quick to point out the sins of another man's daughter, but you don't want anyone pointing out the sins of your own? Religion and culture are not the same. They're worse than every ticking bomb. They're worse than every gun. But we don't see any restrictions on it. Someone please tell them. I've grown so tired of yelling. I don't want to get tired of living. Someone please tell them. I've grown so tired of yelling. I'm so scared every day because this is a culture that we breathe in, and I'm so proud of my culture, but this is not something I want to be proud of. Someone please tell them. I've grown tired of yelling.
Wow. That's Dua Bajwa. B-A-J-W-A. Dua Bajwa, her new book, Finding Home. Dua, your work is amazing. I just want to put it on blast and have the whole world listen to it. We do have another call. Mike is on the line.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I just got on the line. Thank you, Dua.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just had one comment, and then it went led another, of course, but some of the first groups, demographics of people in newly formed authoritarian, you know, violent, fascist, defensive political organizations and governments, they attack not just intellectuals, but they target poets. So, you know, when someone that's really awful is targeting you, that's kind of a an honor, you know.
Victor Jara, but I'm thinking of people right off the top of my head. So, Mike, what I hear you saying is that if we really looked closely, we'd see that poetry is actually one of the most important and sharpest political tools maybe in our toolkit. Maybe that's kind of what I hear you saying, possibly.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a real threat because it is powerful, and people that just care about power and the control, and because they're so defensive or whatever, for whatever reason, that's they want to control it. And I love the call about the three different repeated messages.
Me too.
Because I just a word that popped into my mind, I think of my grandma, who was a teacher, and I've always described her with one word, grace. And it seems to me that the one word grace defines what he was trying to get at, is that people are willing to talk with someone or try to communicate with someone on different levels, even if it's not comfortable for their own level. They're just really trying to communicate with that person.
Anyway,
okay, thank you.
Mike, that was completely fascinating. Dua, we're not going to let anybody hurt you, okay? We're on your team now.
Thank you.
But I liked what Mike said. Poetry is a threat because it is powerful. Dua, do you feel powerful? You're making a muscle right now, sitting on your couch, talking on the phone. Do you feel powerful?
I do. Every time I go to talk somewhere, like I've been hitting different high schools, and I was at a college yesterday. Every time I stop reading and I see people like relating to it, I was in a discussion. My book was a discussion in a classroom yesterday, and there was this one boy. He didn't like. He said he loved my poems, but he didn't like how I was painting America as racist when the rest of the world was racist too, and it was so beautiful. Like, I didn't even have to say anything. The rest of the class literally got up. There was this one Hispanic girl. She said this thing that I can't stop thinking about. She was like, yeah, I understand that the rest of the world has these issues too. But we're not living there. My kids aren't going to live there. We're living here. This is our problem. That, like, the things that are happening in the rest of the world, there are problems too. But if we're going to look at changing the better for the world, we have to start at home.
That's such a fascinating frame to look at this issue because, again, I'm super hyper middle-aged. I've traveled a lot. And with this particular issue, in the United States, we struggle with, you know, people proud of their immigrant ancestry, but really don't know what their immigrants did to come into this country. Really don't even know. right? But they're proud of it, and they're sure that their ancestors followed some kind of rules and blah, 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 blah. But the rules that people coming into this country now are completely different than the rules were 100 years ago and 200 years ago and 300 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it just fascinates me. We sort of have a pride in it, but we want to beat it down when it's next to us somehow. But not always. Yeah. It's a very fraught mosaic that's emotional. When you are doing these tours and you're talking about this poetry with young people, can you talk a little bit more about the response? I mean, it sounds like you get an emotional response from people.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a bad response yet, but I know it's going to come eventually, even if it is from the Pakistani community. But so far, whenever I go to talk to them, they're usually on their feet by the end clapping, and I can't even begin to tell you, like, it just warms your heart. And it's like, I was talking at an open mic last Friday, and there was a man there, an elderly man, and before I left, like, I was in a hurry, but he stopped me and he was crying, and he was like, his son was also performing there, and he said, you know, we come here with nothing, dreaming one day that this will happen. And, you know, you're making this dream for your parents. And it was probably like, I'll probably never get over that. Like, it was just so nice hearing that.
And that's the bridge that you're building with your work, actually, right?
Yeah, it was like when I was little, if you asked me what I was, I would hate to tell you that I'm from another place. Half my poems are about like me chasing the approval of blue eyes because I thought, you know, this was the only way to fit in. I didn't understand why I wasn't allowed to, you know, wear short skirts or like go out as much as my friends because I didn't want the Muslim culture around me because I thought, you know, this makes me different from other people. And because that makes me different, they look at me weird. And I don't want it to be looked at weird. You know, when you're like 6 or 7, you desperately want friends. And I was bullied a lot. So I was willing to throw away everything just to be accepted. And now that I'm older, I am so proud of my culture and the morals and the values that come with it. And I want people to see, you know, we turn on the news and we see, okay, ISIS, okay, we see terror. And, you know, most of the time, the people that think that way, it's because they've been taught. I have a poem somewhere, I'll read it later, but it's the end of it is a child is not born racist, he is taught. And chances are, if you end up talking to a person for a long period of time and their mindset is different from yours, there's a slight chance that after actually giving them information, they sort of understand. They sort of, like, think about it different.
It's funny you would say that because when I actually personally believe that Facebook is a cancer on all societies all over the world. There's something about Facebook specifically that seems to breed distrust and fear and mm-hmm. hate. But what you just said, when you're sharing your art with people, and sometimes people will come to your side, sometimes people will have a transformative experience. Now that's what I'm not reading about in the newspaper. That right there is what I'm not reading about anywhere. And I see people on my Facebook, and I have a gigantic Facebook, and I love all y'all. But sometimes I see people come out with a post that says, no argument ever wins anyone to their side. Like, people are literally hemorrhaging pessimism about the possibility of people getting on the same page. Poetry page, see what I did there. But I wanted to ask you, and after I ask you this, it'd be great if you could read another poem. We've got about 7 minutes left in the show. But can you talk about your fellow artists? You had mentioned that you've gone to some events and read your poetry and interacted with young people and stuff. Are there other young writers, artists, people that you've met through this that you're doing that you think that we should be aware of or that you want to just talk about how great they are?
Yeah, I was at an open mic last Friday, and there was this 23-year-old on the stage, and he was just saying the most, like, heart-touching poems. I think his name was Malik Naeem, something like that. But as he was just they were all present-day poems, and he just, as he said it, like, I was saying to my friend, I was like, wow, I feel like everything I just said was complete trash compared to what he said. Because the way he made you feel, he was talking about humanity as a whole, saying, you know, this is how we should be. This is the bad part. This is the good. And he had one poem about heaven and hell, and how he said, you know, it doesn't matter about, like, what we're doing to be better than one another. It matters that what we're doing together that will get us in heaven. And it didn't matter if you were Christian or Muslim. It mattered about the concept of being good.
Wow.
I just thought it was really nice.
Now I'm going to want to go and find that guy and find that poem. So, Dua, do you have another poem to share with us?
Yes, I do. One second.
If you just tuned in, we're running out of show. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. We're speaking with poet Dua Bajwa. Her newest book is, her first book is Finding Home. An incredible voice, incredible art. And are you ready?
Yes.
Yay.
In kindergarten, we colored drawings of people holding hands around the world. Where you came from didn't come in the way of holding hands. What happened to us since then? Why do we stop caring? Is it because schools are being shot up and students are dying? Is it because the media is dividing us between police officers and Black Lives Matter? Is it because every time we turn on the news, all we see is devastation? They ask us why we yell and scream in riots, and we show them the blood of our neighbors on the streets. And I tell them, I wake up every morning and I go on Twitter and I see that there are 26 dead or 78 injured, and it's just starting to get to me. Why don't they understand that every death from a different faith is not a win for them, it's a loss? How can you celebrate what should be mourned? America, what have you become? But alongside, you've spent nights in different places, searching behind staircases and leaving footsteps and parts of your soul everywhere, because while you fear what this land could do to you, you've also fallen in love with what it could offer you. So you let yourself grow attached and devote your time to figuring out how to make it better, because you know there was a time before these monsters came and frightened everyone. This land was built on the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Don't worry, they'll remember that soon enough. This is the oath to my dying, drowning country. I will save you. Just give me some time.
I'm looking at the engineer. We're going, whoa. This is poet Dua Bajwa coming to us from all the way from the other side of the United States, which is an amazing piece of technology there. And I have to say, Dua, I mean, I met you because you actually reached out to KBOO to ask if somebody here in this radio station would be interested in elevating your art. Who are you reaching out to promote your book and to also build community? I have a sense that you've got a big emerging community out there. Who are you talking to?
I am talking to, my community is very supportive, but I've been reaching out to all parts of Virginia and Washington, middle schools, high schools, and I'm trying to reach out to colleges, but as to whatever I find online that I see, like likes poetry that's also talking about diversity, I give them an email. Like if you look at my sent box, it's like quite a frightening number of people that I've just sent emails to, but when I get them back, I do, it's just a really good feeling.
So this is your first book of poetry. Are you working on a next book of poetry?
I am, but I think I have the idea of it in the back of my head, but I think I'm going to wait for Finding Homes, like for it to be a year since it got published, and then I'll start publishing the second one.
Last couple questions here, and we have now, we've talked for almost an hour, we've gone through a lot of territory, but I have to bring it back to this point. What do you hope to achieve with this book? Who are you talking to? What do you want the book to, who is the book for, and what do you want it to do for them and for us?
I feel like it's a lot for girls who are in South Asian girls that feel it's, I am the eldest and only daughter of my family, and because of that, they were very conservative growing up. They were very overprotective. So I know there are hundreds and thousands of girls scattered all around the country, and they feel like what their parents are trying to do is just suffocating them. But I want to reach out to them and to the parents. I want the parents to know, you know, it's okay to be lenient. It's okay not to be so scared. And for the girls, I want them to know that, you know, we're in this together. I believe in you. I believe in the greater good. If there's evil in the world, I also believe there's good. And I believe that we're all going to be okay soon. It's just a matter of time.
All right. We're wrapping up. Where can people get your book? And can we come to Virginia to visit you?
Oh, my God. I would absolutely love that.
Where can we get the book?
It's on Amazon. Unfortunately, the Kindle version is not available right now, but the Amazon copy for the hard copy is available. And when you go to buy it on Amazon, it's not under Dua Bajwa. That's like the family name. It's under Dua Hamad.
All right. And your phone's cracking up a little bit. So it's Finding Home by Dua Hamad, H-A-M-M-A-D. And that's Dua, yeah. D-U-A-A-H. And then H-A-M-M-A-D. We'll try to put something on the KBOO website. Dua, I just really want to thank you for taking the time this morning. We had a little bit of confusion about D.C. and the West Coast. It was pretty exciting to bring your voices over these airwaves. It's just really an honor. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much to everybody who called in, everybody that was so sweet. You have no idea how much this means to me. Like, I'm just starting out. So the fact that people are so kind, it just makes my world.
Excellent. Finding Home, Dua Hamad Bajwa, best to you. And it's the end of this show. I just want to thank everyone who called. Coming up at 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell, come on down.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that glitter is gold? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, we've got at 9:30, Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering speaking with investigative reporter Robert Perry about the mainstream media's exaggeration of Russiagate. At 10 today, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, Between the Covers, Dan Johnson today talks with author Craig Johnson about the latest book in his Longmire series, the basis for the Netflix show Longmire. That's all coming up right after we hear from Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch, bringing you the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at the Clinton Street Theater.